Jerry Bader Show, 10:06. Before we move on, Matt took a call from a woman who hates me. She hates me or hates the show? Oh, hates me. She said she hates me. Ma'am, have we ever met? Well, I hate you too. Don't know who the hell you are, but I hate you too. She personally hates me. Has never met. And Matt says, when I told her I would tell you, she said, no, you won't.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He told me.
Of course he would tell me that. She wouldn't come on the air. I don't know what racism is. I don't know the sting of racism. She's right about that. I know something about being the short, fat kid my whole life. I know a little something about that. I'm not saying it's the same as racism. I didn't say that. No, I will never know the sting of racism. The hell was her point anyway? I mean, not the one on her head. I mean, just, you know, the one she was trying to make. All right. Enough fun with it. Actually, you can never have enough fun with a liberal moron. And now I repeat myself. Anyway, now on to our next topic. Couple of things, significant issues that we want to talk about, including a bombshell yesterday that only one media outlet thus far has noticed. To talk about that and other things, we are joined now by U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Senator, good morning.
Morning, Jerry. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. As I let your office know, I want to start with something. We're going to talk about your lawsuit concerning the Affordable Care Act. We'll get to that. But I want to start with something I think is a huge story. Newly released emails on the Benghazi terror attack suggest a senior White House aide played a central role in preparing former U.N. Ambassador Susan Rice for her controversial Sunday show appearances, where she wrongly blamed protests over an internet video. The emails reveal that she was prepped to push that storyline, that this was a protest over that video and not what it really was. We have been told there's no smoking gun. Boy, Senator, this sure looks and smells like one to me.
Well, Jerry, I think that email is from Ben Rhodes, who is a national security advisor, but by the way, whose brother also runs CBS News.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just confirms what all of us pretty well suspected. I think what all of us pretty well knew is the whole story. That's what it was. It was a story made up by this administration to mislead the American public on really what caused the Benghazi attacks, and it primarily to cover up the feckless policy of this administration. They wanted to have this narrative going in the election that they had decimated Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was on the run. Their foreign policy was just fabulous, and Libya was a great success story. And, of course, the terrorist attack on our Benghazi consulate that killed four brave Americans, including our ambassador, certainly didn't confirm what they wanted to portray in the election. So, again, this email, I think, just kind of confirms what we all not only suspected, but I think basically knew.
You were vilified for that's the word I would use. You were vilified for a confrontation that you had with then Secretary Clinton over this. And the reality is, this is another one of those cases to me where the mainstream media has been way too successful in marginalizing those who are asking legitimate questions about this. So the question I would have to you, it seems as this is a scandal whose time has come and gone. Will Republicans, or really the American public, more importantly, you think ever get to the bottom of this?
I think, again, I always describe the whole events in Benghazi before, during, and after as kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. We know what it basically looks like, although there's a lot of some very key pieces missing. For example, we still don't know what involvement President Obama had after his meeting with the Defense Secretary. That's about it. He kind of seems like he pretty well checked out. Really don't know what involvement Secretary Clinton had during that night, her 3 p.m. in the afternoon moment. Really don't know her involvement. We certainly know how derelict she was in her duty prior to the Benghazi attack, denying the requested security, beefed up security in Benghazi, which I think really, had we just had a minimal increase in security, I think we probably could have prevented the deaths of those four Americans. So there's a real dereliction of duty before, during, and then I would say after, just in terms of misleading the American public. So I hope we do get to the bottom of it. I think the American people deserve the truth. I think certainly the survivors of those four brave Americans deserve to know exactly what happened. So we'll continue to press on that. But this administration is far from the most transparent in history, and it's very difficult to get to the truth. You know, not only in this area, but the IRS scandal or just across the board. This is a very difficult administration to get to tell the truth.
Well, it's tremendous frustration. And you mentioned, you know, and the recent revelations in the IRS scandal. Here, and I know, you know, there's really no point in complaining about this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Judicial Watch shouldn't have had to request these emails. I've tried to imagine a bizarre world where Democrat scandals are treated by the media as Republican scandals, but the media not only doesn't do the heavy lifting here, Senator, they put up this force field, and I know you have lamented it before. It's just really frustrating.
Sure, it's very frustrating. You know, Jerry, you originally said a confrontation I had with Secretary Clinton. There's no confrontation. I just asked her a very simple question.
Right.
You know, why didn't you just place a call to the survivors, and we would have known, you would have known instantaneously that this was no protest that sprang from, or an attack that sprang from a protest. This is an attack. This is a terrorist attack, and we knew it right from the get-go. And, you know, so it was just very, very simple question that Hillary Clinton realized she was kind of backed in the corner, and that's how she reacted with that very glib comment, you know, what difference does it make? And we're starting to see exactly what difference it makes as this president's leading from behind foreign policy is you know, just showing to be a real disaster across the world.
Hey, I want to follow up on that before we get to your lawsuit. I'm glad you mentioned that because there's a poll out from the Wall Street Journal NBC poll that says a majority of Americans actually want the U.S. to reduce its role in world affairs, which I found rather stunning that they actually, if America's role in the world, do you want it more active or less active? After 9/11, 37% more active, 14% less active. In April 2014, 47% less active, 19% more active. So has a majority of the American public bought in to lead from behind?
I'm afraid that might be the case because we don't have a president that is leading. We don't have a president that's explaining, for example, why Syria does represent a national security threat to this nation. A president that doesn't really explain, you know, what dangers, long-term dangers, what long-term costs will be associated if we allow Vladimir Putin to continue his aggressive expansion with impunity. If we continue to show weakness, how that gives him strength, how they give strength to other potential adversaries, because they're all watching. North Korea is watching. China's watching. Iran is watching. And as a result, they're going to continue their aggression, their expansionary tendencies, and it's not good for world peace, and it's not going to be good for the United States. You know, we had our heads buried in the sand when Al-Qaeda declared war on us in the 90s. And because we tried to deny that reality, which is always a very dangerous thing to do, denying reality, thousands of Americans were slaughtered in the attacks on 9/11.
In fact, our allies are getting jittery about that in the regions that you pointed out. Talking with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, switching gears now. This week, Judge William Griesbach of the U.S. District Court for Eastern District of Wisconsin granted a motion to file both amicus briefs in support of Senator Johnson's lawsuit. One brief was signed by 38 members of Congress. The other was signed by Representative Trent Franks, Americans for Tax Reform, the American Civil Rights Union, and the National Center for Public Policy Research. And you know, this is a big deal because there are those who have been trying to marginalize you and your effort here on the Affordable Care Act.
That is true. So I think the fact that I got, in the end, 39 fellow members of Congress to join amicus briefs, there were two of them, and the fact that the court accepted those amicus briefs, and Judge Griesbach, in his order accepting the brief, said that in particular one of them had a unique theory of standing, saying that the members of Congress maybe should have the right to challenge the usurpation of legislative authority, and that really is the heart of this lawsuit. I'm not saying he is agreeing with that. He's just stating that is a certainly a novel argument that he wants to consider. And you know, Jerry, as much as we need to end this special tax treatment for members of Congress, the real heart and soul of the lawsuit, the main reason I kind of went against the grain here in Washington D.C. to say the least, is because we have witnessed an erosion of congressional power. We have seen that delicate balance of three branches of government that really is there to limit government and preserve our freedoms. We've seen that balance erode dangerously over time, and I'm not the only one stating that. Jonathan Turley, who is a law professor that mm-hmm. basically supports President Obama in some powerful testimony twice before the House Judiciary Committee, says that we are at a tipping point. We're in a constitutional crisis because this president has crossed the line, and he is basically violating his oath to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. He's making law. There's nothing in the Constitution that gives the president the authority to enact, amend, or repeal laws, and yet this is exactly what this president is doing, not only with the health care law, but with the EPA in terms of enacting cap-and-trade regulations when the Congress refuses to enact it into law. We really have developed this fourth branch of government. It's the regulatory agencies. We don't write laws anymore. We write these frameworks that just give the executive and his agencies all the power they think they need to write law from the executive. And it's just not our constitutional framework. That's not the way government should run.
It's kind of interesting. We're talking with Senator Ron Johnson. The Hill resurrected a story, and I thought it was a continuation of it. I was really confused. When you first brought this suit, fellow Wisconsin Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner called it a stunt. I when I saw the story in The Hill, I thought Jim and you went at it again, but apparently this is just a continuation where the way The Hill reports it, that you slammed a fellow Republican lawmaker on Tuesday. Boy, that's old news. How did that come up? Yeah, go ahead.
It's extremely old news. Now, I was on C-SPAN's Washington Journal, and again, they continue to dredge Congressman Sensenbrenner's certainly wasn't supportive of my suit when I first filed it. But, the point I was trying to make is his disagreement, he didn't really talk much about it past the first couple of days. I'm hoping it's because he realized that this is an incredibly important constitutional issue. This isn't just about that employer contribution, which I really have no problem with any employer making contribution to employees' health care. I am opposed to the special tax-preferred treatment, which is unfair and needs to be reversed. But in particular, I'm concerned about the fact that this president has no legal authority to change the law. This is his signature piece of legislation. It was his party that wrote the law. He signed it into law. If he doesn't like the result, and I can certainly understand why he doesn't, and he's demonstrating that dozens of times by this unilateral action, he needs to come back to Congress to have the law changed. He doesn't have the legal authority to do it. My lawsuit is really the one regulation where we do believe a member of Congress has standing to challenge this unlawful activity by the executive, this unilateral governance in a court of law. And Jonathan Turley basically made the point that it is long overdue that the judiciary get involved in these separation of power issues because it is so important to our constitutional framework.
Only have about 30 seconds, but you've mentioned Turley a couple of times. The reality is there are other prominent liberals that have figured out that if this isn't dealt with, a Republican president could use it against them.
Yeah, one of the amicus briefs, I thought, pointed out pretty carefully. If you follow the administration's argument to its logical conclusion, a president could, for example, cut everybody's taxes by 50%, and because nobody's harmed, nobody could challenge the president's action in that case. And I don't think anybody believes that a president has the authority to unilaterally cut people's taxes.
Or to unilaterally not enforce any of the Affordable Care Act.
Or immigration laws, or, like, say, enact cap and trade, which, of course, this president said because of his policies, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. No, the president doesn't have authority across the board in so many things that he is doing.
U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, thanks for joining us.
Have a great day.
You too. That was packed with a lot of stuff. I want to revisit some of it in 5 minutes. It's 10:20.